everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for tuning in to this live show where we tune in love. That's what I like most about this program, tuning in love, because I believe that love is the only answer. There's a lot of hate going around, and it is so much easier to hate than it is to love. It takes energy, it takes focus, it takes mindfulness, it takes courage, and it takes a lot of focus to work with those voices that we have going on in our heads all the time that are trying to control things. And when other people aren't doing what we like or want, then those voices make us feel not as good as we want to. And it really takes a lot of strength, a lot of effort, a lot of focus to take in a good breath and turn those voices off. It's amazing how powerful a little smile in someone else's direction can be. I know, living here in New York City, just walking through the crowds where we're always trying to ignore everyone, we're all in our own little worlds, rushing to get to wherever we need to go. But just that little connection can lighten someone else's load. And it makes us feel good, too. Something to think about, because things are ugly these days. And I'm not going to fall into that ugly trap. I'm going to do whatever I can to make a positive difference on this planet while I am here. And that means tuning in love all the time. Now, this tuning in love thing starts early. It starts, not, I want to say when we're born, but it starts when we're, even before we're in the womb. And that's why I think, I'm at a loss for words. That's why I think what my next guest has to offer is so very important. My guest is Julia Feliz-Brueck, and she's the author and illustrator of the first ever vegan-themed board book for babies and toddlers called Libby Finds Vegan Sanctuary. As an artist, non-human animals have always been her favorite subject to draw, and she hopes to continue to use her talents to give them a voice and spread compassion towards them. She has been an ethical vegan since 2008 and is also a mom who enjoys creating art for her sons and coloring by their side. And Julia, welcome. You're here from Switzerland, correct?
Hi.
Hi. Yes. There you are, so far away and yet right here. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Anyway, what I was saying is there's really a lot that is formed within us, I think, even before those first few cells come together. And our culture forms a lot of our thoughts and what we think. And a lot of things happen when we're so very young, in the womb and as babies and toddlers. And I was thinking a lot about that when I was reading your book, Libby Finds Vegan Sanctuary. Why did you write this book? Why did you draw this book?
Well, about 3 years ago, my mom actually convinced a family to let this turkey go. And I remember she sent me a message and she's like, this family is going to let her go. It was around Thanksgiving and they actually had her chained in their backyard. And she called me and, what should I do? What should I do? So I contacted the sanctuary and I felt kind of guilty just, you know, leaving her at the sanctuary and, you know, that was it. So I kind of made it my mission to try to raise funds for her every year. And at the same time that I came up with the idea of the book, I was taking an art course. And my son was also about 18 months. And I realized, you know, there was nothing out there for his age group. And by his age group, I mean, a book that wouldn't get completely destroyed, but also a book that spoke, you know, in very simple language, in a way that, you know, he could start understanding what our lifestyle actually means and why we choose to live this life. So I decided that I really wanted to give Livy a voice, and I could do that through my art. But at the same time, I could create a tool for parents to nourish the compassion that we're basically all born with.
We are all born with it. And unfortunately, in many ways, we get blind to that compassion or numbed to that compassion. I was speaking with Robin Raven a couple of weeks ago. She has a children's book out called Santa's First Vegan Christmas. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yes.
And we were talking about the notions that she was showing or exposing, and how there was actually these evil, exploitive undertones in the classic stories that many of us know and love. Just the simple idea of Santa using a whip to drive the reindeers that are pulling his sled. Mm-hmm. And we don't even see the whip, because we're so accustomed to this this hierarchy that we have, where humans dominate other non-human animals, and it's okay, but it's not okay. And these images, these beliefs start when life starts. So a board book, I mean, I never even thought about it, but you've just opened this whole concept to me about the images that are shown in a board book.
Yeah, and that was another thing. I, you know, every time I went to the store to look for books for my baby or my toddler, it was everything's farms, but it's with the farmer, and it's so frustrating because all the messages are the exploitation is so normalized, and that's not what I want for my kids. You know, that's not what I want them to learn. So I thought, you know, I'm going to try to do this. And I was fortunate enough to have support to be able to do it. So I'm really grateful to everybody who has been involved. My publisher, Vegan Publishers, A Well-Fed World, and of course, the Kickstarter supporters.
Yes, all good and important organizations. We love them all. Vegan Publishers, A Well-Fed World. I'm so glad they're out there, and I wish there were more, and there will be more as time goes on. But you mentioned the images in the board books that you were seeing, these farm images. In some ways, it's this big myth, and that's our foundation of what the world is like as we see it when we're babies and toddlers, is a myth. These farms don't even exist anymore. Yeah. Now, And the story in this board book that you've created is very simple, and the images are simple. I imagine that maybe some parents wouldn't want to present the concepts, even though they're presented in a very simple way, to their baby, because they might say, I don't want my child to see this violence.
Yeah, I figured that, you know, if a non-vegan parent would pick up the book, it would actually make them think as well. I think once a parent reads this book, I don't think that, you know, they can stop thinking about what I'm representing. So it's very simple. It's a very simple story, very simple images. But the part where the kids find Libby and they say, you know, basically, we don't want to hurt this non-human. Is there another way? And, you know, the parents, as the the figures that the kids, you know, follow have the choice. And it's up to them to lead by example, of course. So I purposely didn't add anything violent. I know she's changed. But, you know, I would just hope it would make people think. And I just, hopefully people would be open to the message and not shy away from it once they start thinking about it themselves.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just imagining that little baby and that little toddler growing up and then seeing the Thanksgiving turkey on the table.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking up about it.
And the other thing as well is I wanted to post... So I wanted to oppose, you know, the normalization of farm exploitation, but I also wanted to give parents a tool to help explain sanctuaries, because I don't think there's anything really available to also explain what sanctuaries are, and they're such important places, and places where, you know, most vegans will also take their kids, and even non-vegans. So it's all very centered about around compassion, but also safety in sanctuary.
Now, you're in Switzerland right now. May I ask what you're doing there?
Yes. Yes, I've been in Europe for quite a long time. I fell in love with a German.
That's a good story.
And he asked me to move to Europe with him. So... I finished my school work. It was a long time ago, and then we decided to get married, and so I've been here in Europe ever since.
And I know that there are sanctuaries in the United States. How about in Europe?
They're not as many. They're not, you know, if there are, they're very small and just, you know, not very well known. I know that I just found out there's one about 20 minutes from where I live. They have alpacas, horses, and goats that they've rescued. But it's the concept isn't as well known as it would be in the U.S., but I think it's starting to, you know, grow, which is a good thing.
Now, how old are your children?
My baby is 5.5 months, and my toddler is 2.5.
Okay, so they haven't entered the school system yet.
No.
Yeah, and do you plan on sending them to the local school when they're old enough?
Yeah, my toddler, actually, he goes to the what's called creche. It's the nursery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they've been really accommodating. We told them that we are vegan, and they said, okay, well, give us a list. And then it was really cool because they would confirm where they're, okay, is this okay? Okay, no, it has eggs. And so that was really great. But the only weird thing is that he can't stay. He can only go in the morning. And he does so because he's really, really social and he's really, really active. So he always wants to be around other kids. And that's why we decided that, you know, he would go a few times a week. But with lunch, they're a little more... unsure about it, so they won't let him stay past 12 because they're unsure what to do. So that's really funny.
Okay.
And I'm sure I'll have to deal with that once they go to school, so we'll see about that.
I used to live in the south of France in the early 90s, and I was a vegan then, and there were some wonderful pâtés that were made in Switzerland that were in the local health food stores. So mm-hmm. There were some forward-thinking folks back then.
Yeah, I mean, I've been here now 5.5 years, and it's amazing the amount of vegan items that are now in the stores versus when I first moved here, it was basically non-existent. And now we even have have you heard of the vegan grocery store in Germany?
Yes, yes.
They're now selling their products in our local grocery store, in the big grocery stores. So it's really taking a hold, and it's great because I can pretty much get anything that I want, except for, of course, it's not the same. I still miss things like Gardein and things like that. My aunt is actually mailing me some mac and cheese comfort food because I love it, but and they don't sell that kind of stuff here. But I mean, I can pretty much get anything and everything. So it's come a long way and it's really exciting.
And where can people find Libby's, your book, Libby Finds Vegan Sanctuary?
You can find it on Amazon. It's available on Amazon and also on the Vegan Publishers website. And you can also find the book on Facebook, where you can follow for updates and events. I actually have there's a reading event in a bookstore in Florida coming up in January, which is really exciting.
Okay, do you have another book on the horizon that you're planning?
I have several. My dream was actually when I started with this book, I wanted to be able to use my art, my abilities to create other books to tell the stories of other non-humans in other sanctuaries. So hopefully, you know, I have so many ideas and hopefully I'll be able to create more.
Okay, well, Julia, thank you for joining me and It's All About Food. I really enjoyed looking through your book. It opened up a whole bunch of new thoughts for me, too, which I'm excited to start thinking more about. And that's how we influence the really, really young, the babies and the toddlers. And this board book is an excellent beginning. Thank you for that. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that was Julia Felice Brueck, all the way from Switzerland. And check out, if you have a baby or a toddler or know someone that does, this is a lovely little book to put in a stocking this season. Libby Finds Vegan Sanctuary. Okay, let's take a quick break. And I've got my guests for the next part of the show in the studio, so I want to get started with them right away. Let's take a quick break.
You're tuned to PRN. We'll keep bringing you the best in alternative voices for social and political news, the environment, health, the economy, and a whole lot more. All you have to do is keep listening. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello. This is Dane Wigington, host for the weekly Global Alert News Hour from GeoengineeringWatch.org. I'm grateful and honored to now be a part of the PRN Radio Network lineup. Every Saturday at 2 p.m. on the Global Alert News Hour, I'll cover the most dire frontline issues and stories which pose the greatest and most immediate threat to us all and to the biosphere on which we depend to support the web of life. I'll stitch these stories together to form a coherent picture of what's unfolding and why, and what each of us can do to help alter the human race's current course of genocide and ecocide. Join me on the show every Saturday at 2 p.m. for a crystal clear look at the ominous horizon that lies before us.
This is Peter Bregan with exciting news about the month of December on PRN. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. in December on the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, I will be interviewing Danish physician and researcher Peter Goerze. He's the author of Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, and also the author of Deadly Psychiatry and Organized Denial. Goerze is one of the clearest, strongest, and uncensored voices in medicine and psychiatry today. It'll be an intense four-hour seminar on what's the matter with psychiatry and what can be done about it.
Karen Hartglass, and here we are. It's the second part of the show today. Thanks for joining me. All right, this is very exciting because right here in the Progressive Radio Network studio in Manhattan, I am joined by two people who've got a wonderful documentary that's premiering here in New York City this week, actually. I'm lucky to be able to have them here with me. Marilee Jacobs is a co-producer, and Paul David Kanemer Jr. is director and co-producer, too. Yes, and the documentary is called Eating You Alive. It's exciting. It's a feature-length documentary revealing the truth behind why Americans are so sick and what we can do about that. And I'm sure a lot of my listeners out there know what we can do about it, right? Half of all the adults in the U.S. struggle with chronic health conditions, including cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, obesity, hypertension, Alzheimer's, arthritis, erectile dysfunction, on and on and on and on and on. And despite countless dollars spent on medical research, new drugs, and innovative technology to improve our health, more Americans are disabled and dying from chronic disease than ever before. And Eating Alive takes a scientific look at the reasons why we're so sick, who's responsible for feeding us the wrong information, and how we can use whole food, plant-based nutrition to take control of our health one bite at a time. So, Marilee and Paul, thanks for joining me here today. How are both of you?
We're great. Thank you for having us.
We're doing great. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, and Paul, you're here in from California.
Yes.
Facing the chill. You haven't even taken your coat off.
Well, that's true,
Stay a while. No, it's cold outside. Yeah, it's actually not that bad thanks to global warming.
Yeah, good answer.
It could be worse. Yeah. Well, tell me about this film and your journey getting to making it. Now, obviously, I'm going to let you talk, but I'm still talking. But
it's your show.
Obviously, you learned a lot before wanting to make this movie, so maybe we should start there.
Well, actually, yes. First we made the change, then we made the film. And I'll let Paul take it from there because it was really his fault that we went down this path.
So thank you for joining us.
It was all him.
Yeah, well, honestly, we had a doctor in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is where we're from, approach us about a vegan lifestyle, hopefully plant-based lifestyle.
A doctor?
A doctor, yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of strange. Now, I mean, in retrospect, it's like,
Nobody does that.
That doesn't happen, yeah. So, I mean, imagine that, a doctor looking out for our health. But anyhow, seriously, no, I scratched that. But anyhow, so seriously, we literally had a doctor that approached us, and he said, consider this lifestyle. Consider living this lifestyle. He literally teaches a seminar every the first of every month, about 150 people in the area, literally in Tennessee, about eating this way. And so we talked to the doctor about it, and we decided, okay, I think we're going to do this. We're going to try this as a team. Myself, Marilee, and our whole crew, production team, decided we would go on this and do this sort of a trial for ourselves. And in 6 weeks, I dropped 45 pounds, went back to my high school weight. Marilee, she didn't have a lot of weight to lose, but she feels better. She felt better.
Yeah, I dropped about 15 pounds. I'm 51 and have had a couple of kids, so you seem to pack on a little bit extra. Mm-hmm. And I did as well. So, yeah, I lost a little bit. But I think the really large stories, no pun intended, are from a lot of the rest of our crew. Because I think in total, our team has lost about 500 pounds since we made the change.
You're making it sound like it was easy. Mm-hmm. So this doctor suggested you do this, and you just said, okay. He's like, yeah, okay.
Well, yeah. See, there is more to the story than that. He's not getting you the details.
Yeah, I didn't know if we had like a minute. I don't know how much time we had. But seriously, so for me, my father had had heart disease, had a heart attack, had a stroke. And so I was kind of at that point. I was 47, and I thought, okay, I'm kind of destined for this whole thing. Genetically, I'm destined for that. My mom has a lot of cancers and diabetes on her side of the family. So, like, it's just going to happen. And I thought, he gave me some information, told me to watch Forks Over Knives documentary. We watched that. And then, of course, when he unveiled that to us, then we sort of went through and watched all the other docs that you can find on Netflix. And it just sort of, it's like, we've got to do this. And I'm not the type of person that sort of walks into the shallow end of the pool. I just dive in the deep end. Hmm. So that's what we did.
Well, and actually, he's got a mouse in his pocket because it was he that decided that he wanted to do it. And then he kind of enlisted some help.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't cook, so that was a big problem for me. I can't boil water, so I needed help. So I asked Marilee, I said, would you be willing to do this? And if you are, you'd have to cook the food. And she said, yeah. And so another lady that works with us as well, she said, okay, I'll learn how to cook this way. I mean, Marilee, you've been vegetarian for a good portion of your life. And Jody, another lady that works with us, she had been vegetarian for a good portion of her life. So it was a change, but not as radical as a change as it was for me, because I grew up in Alabama eating, you know, meat all three meals. So literally, we decided we would all do that. And the changes that took place as far as not my weight loss, but my health, rotator cuff issues and different things I had going on, when those things changed for me, like in 3 weeks to the day of changing the food going in my mouth, I didn't really want to give it credit. I didn't want to give the diet, the lifestyle, the credit. But then after a few months, it was like, I don't think I'll ever have meat again. And of course, then I learned about the animals. I mean, then I learned about the environment. So it's like I just entered through the door of health, and it changed my life. But then it opened this whole world that I didn't know existed. So it was very transformational for all of us, honestly.
Well, what a wonderful thing that your doctor suggested that you do this. And exactly. I really hope that the new doctors that are coming along will do this more and more, because there are many doctors that think they know better on so many levels and think that you're not going to want to change. Mm-hmm. So they don't even bother telling you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that's so exciting for us, because when we, going through the transition for us, we faced the same challenges as anybody else, you know, saying, oh, I'm going to cook this way. Well, that's great in theory, but in practical application, it definitely is a challenge. It's you're having to rethink everything about food, not only what you're eating, but how to prepare it, you know. And the biggest thing we get is, you know, well, how in the world do you saute veggies with no oil? You know, that's like one of the big ones. Yep. And so it was a change for us as well. Had to do a lot of research and a lot of trial and error, because there's millions of recipes out there, but that doesn't mean that they're all great,
that's right.
So a lot of trial and error. But I think and there's the component of doing it as a team makes it so much easier, obviously, than somebody who's trying to do it on their own, because we had that internal support system. And that was just amazing. So once we start going through these changes and these challenges, and we're watching every documentary that we can find out there on the subject matter, it's like, you know, there's some things that all these docs are so great about giving us information, and we learn so much from all of them. But there was a couple of components that we walk away from still needing to help us make the transition more successfully. And that was the how factor. You know, it's like, great, everything given to us makes us believe why we should do this, but how do we do this? So at that point, we thought, you know, we're a production team, so it just makes sense. It's like the perfect storm. Why not tell our story, but not make it so much about us as telling our story through the stories of everyone else? And in starting to acquire the cast, so to speak, for that, we really wanted to interview physicians, because our physicians are still who we go to and trust our health with. And that was what was so exciting when you talk about the number of doctors that are out there, because there is a growing number amassing that are whole food plant-based practicing physicians. And our young ones coming up through medical school are more open to this now more than ever, I think, because largely because that generation was kind of open to it from the vegan perspective, animal rights, and the environment anyway. So to add the health component just makes it really more exciting for a doctor coming up nowadays, because now they're actually going to be able to do what they went into medical school to do, and that was to heal people.
Yeah, well, that's part of the story from our founding fathers, as I like to call them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like John McDougall's story is how he wasn't healing anybody, and he discovered healthy food made the difference. And isn't that why doctors become doctors? Because they want to heal?
Yeah, what a concept.
I think that's so the case. And so many of them that we interviewed talked about their disillusionment. Mm-hmm. You know, they really gotten burnt out in practice. And it wasn't until they discovered this life approach and this health approach that it really changed things for them, and they became passionate again about what the field that they had gone into.
Well, it's exciting for me when I watched your film. I've been a vegan for almost 30 years and vegetarian for longer. And I think the only film back in the day was John Robbins' Diet for New America that PBS had created after his 1987 bestseller of the same name. There really wasn't anything else. Dr. Michael Clapper had a few food videos back then on videotape, if anyone remembers what videotape is.
I'm not going to admit to that. It tells my age.
We really needed material, and it's really a short amount of time. That's a few decades, which is like nothing. It seems like a very long time, believe me, but it's really nothing. And what I was excited to see were all the new doctors, a diverse collection of doctors, not just our white male founding fathers. As I love them all, you know, Dr. McDougall and Dr. Jill Furman and Dr. Michael Clapper and Dr. Michael Greger, a little younger, but he's still up there too, and Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. T. Colin Campbell isn't a medical doctor, but he's right up there as a nutrition expert. Who else am I missing? Dr. Dean Ornish.
Barnard.
Yeah.
Dr. Neil Barnard, of course. Yes. I mean, they've all paved the way and done wonderful work. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, it's time for everybody to get on board. Every size, shape, color, gender, all that stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the points that we really wanted to make was that it's not... This is not a California thing. This is not some, you know, just crazy way of life or way of living, but it's literally, it's evidence-based science, and it's not just from a handful of doctors. It's literally practicing physicians across the country, and you're never very far from someone that can heal you with food. And that was one of the bigger points that we wanted to make. You know, you see in so many of the docs that are so, they're so great and so convicting, but we wanted to give this what I think is a realistic idea, the fact that there are doctors across the country, and you can find these people that will help you. So that's one of the points we wanted to make, as well as we wanted to take it a step further after convincing you, hopefully, that you want to live this way, that you can live this way. And it's not that difficult to do, and we try to show you how easy it is to actually shop for the foods that you need to shop for, cook, you know, learn how to cook, and recipes within there, and then inspire you to go out and do it. And that's our, that was the objective of the film, that's the goal of the film, and we hope that it hits the mark.
Unfortunately, there are many, many people on the standard American diet who are not healthy and need this information. You showed personal stories and testimonials from people who had all kinds of illnesses and health compromises, and then found the truth.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Who are these people and how did you find them? I there's so many of them out there, but the ones that agreed to participate.
Marilee, first of all, is responsible for bringing them in, so I will let her answer most of that. But I will say that, you know, the people that were a part of it, anybody that has gone through transformation like this or has changed their way of eating to this lifestyle, you don't do it accidentally. You know, no one is sort of just, you know, you drive to McDonald's, anybody can do that. You start living a Whole Foods plant-based life and changing your health, you can't help but become passionate about it. And so as Marilee reached out to these people to give us their stories, they're excited to do that. They're passionate about it because they want the world to know that this little secret should not be a little secret. It's been kept from us, and we should all know this. So they were passionate about telling us. Yeah, the stories were just amazing, but Marilee did all the work, so it made it happen.
I think a lot of it was just a gift, otherworldly, honestly, in so many cases, the people that we were connected with. But, you know, people who have had such success, physicians who have had such success, like Dr. Furman and Dr. Barnard, and we had asked them early on, do you have any patients that you've treated, you know, that have gone through amazing transformations? So that was a good source. One of the stories in which I think a couple of the stories which you would probably relate to and remember was one about Dr. Ron Weiss, a physician that opens the film. And I don't want to be, this is a spoiler. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who's coming this week in New York. But his story was very compelling. And literally, you know, the internet and Google search is a wonderful thing. And when you're just new into this movement, Googling things is just kind of provides just a marvelous volume of information. And one of the stories I was Googling about a whole food plant-based expert up in this area and ran across his story that had been buried in something. I ran across, he wasn't that well known at the time, and started reading up about how he had sold his practice and had purchased this 348-acre farm in Long Valley, New Jersey, and how he treats patients, you know, this way from the farm, and really incorporates all those whole food, not just eating this way, but growing things. He was a botanist, undergraduate, and so, you know, he really knows all about plants. So that was one really compelling story. Another one, I think we were traveling, and I ran across Mylon Ross's story as well and said, this is amazing, and we absolutely just have to get him. So I called him up, and I said, hey, you know, here's what we're doing, and here's who we are, and here's a little bit about our backstory, and we would love to interview you for the documentary that we're putting together, and would you be interested? And he said, yes. So we headed to Denver, where he was living at the time, and interviewed him. And his story is just so compelling and so inspirational. And it's the same for all of them. And then the physicians themselves, you know, I don't think there's anything more powerful, honestly, than hearing a physician who is trained in traditional medicine actually go through the very same thing that everybody else does with regards to chronic disease, discovers this message, and turns their health around. And those stories are incredibly, you know, compelling and very inspiring as well.
I like to say that it takes a lot of courage as an adult, and especially an older adult, to make this kind of change. And as I mentioned before, I became a vegetarian. I started on the path at 15. And when you're a teenager, it's not hard to be rebellious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. I'm experiencing that all the time. I am teenagers, so I get that.
My dad used to call me Contrary Karen, you know, and I want to think that my choices were made from a profound understanding of right and wrong, but I know that some of it was, you know, I just wanted to be different. Okay. Anyway, so for adults that are changing their diet, especially older adults, and for doctors, too, to take this stand takes a lot of courage because that's not what the mainstream is telling us.
Yeah, and it's not where the money is either.
Oh, the money. Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, there is that, isn't there? Yeah, we don't forget about that, do we?
Actually, Paul has great stories because his family, his parents, are in their late 70s, early 80s, and they actually made the change, but not until they finished watching him, you know, go through the transition.
Yeah, well,
and the same way with my parents as well.
Yeah. Your children?
My children, no. Paul's had a little
they're
more success with
they're
his
vegetarian. Vegetarian.
They're vegetarian, yeah. They still mess with the dairy and that kind of thing. They eat when I'm at home cooking, then they eat what I fix. But that's not to say that, you know, they go out with their friends and they don't have a cheese pizza. But I have hope because oftentimes they'll go out with their friends, they'll eat something that they really shouldn't, and they'll come back to me and they go, oh, man, I don't feel so good. I wish I hadn't eaten that. Mm-hmm. So I just smile and tuck that away because they're teenagers. So I'm figuring at some point in time they're going to make the conscious decision not to do that because of how it made them feel. And I keep reminding them when that happens, okay, and you know how you feel, so pay attention to that. And I'm thinking maybe next time you're tempted, you'll remember this moment and you'll make that choice for yourself because I'm, you know, at this age, you need to be making your own decisions that way. So I think they're starting to see that. But yeah. Paul's really excited because he's got three kids and they've all made the transition, which is very, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, again, being from Alabama, being raised on sugar, fat, and salt, and then for me to make the transition and to watch my mom and dad who, as Mary said, my dad is 80, my mom is 78, and they thought that I had cancer when I first went on the diet.
Because you were so thin.
Because you start losing weight and everybody associates,
thin.
Oh my God, you're losing weight, you're going to wither away, you can't cast a shadow, what's wrong with you, and all this kind of thing. Because, I think our perception as Americans are so far skewed. Mm-hmm. We don't actually realize just how overweight we are in this country. Yeah, because we're, well, literally, no pun intended, we're fed this ridiculous falseness, this information that makes us be this way and live this way and then, again, get the results of being obese the way they are. So my mom and dad thought, they were so worried for me. But then my dad noticed my skin. And he know, you know, hey, I have you. But my dad noticed, you know, things looking different, you know, just because of the food.
That pasty white pallor went away.
Yeah.
And you had this colorful glow.
Yeah. Yeah. He noticed, you know, what health looks like a little bit. And so he saw that in me. And then my mom was very, she was not wishing to do it at all. But then when she found that she had 50% blockage in her carotid arteries. Over 50% blockage in carotid artery. She said, you know, I think I'm going to try this. And so she did. And 3 months to the day almost of making that transition to going to whole foods, plant-based, no oil, no sugar, or no added sugar, no added oil, she literally went back and was well within the normal range of below 20% blockage. So it reversed it that quickly. And so at that point, she never looked back, and she'll never have meat again. And she was 78, and she's doing great. Mm. My sister, at 8 years old, she was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And for 48 years, she took medicines. And they had told her that she wouldn't be able to walk possibly when she was an adult. She was to a point where she would get up every morning. It would take her 45 minutes to kind of warm her body up and all those kind of things. And now, after, I think, roughly 9 months into this lifestyle, we call it, she was off all medications and no longer had any signs of arthritis. And so it just changed her life.
But, of course, rheumatoid arthritis has no connection to diet and what we eat. Of course not. I mean, they've been saying that for forever.
They say that right now.
Yeah.
They say that about lupus and about, you know, type 2 diabetes to a great extent. It's changing now. But a lot of things, they say that about cancers. You know, several cancers. We spend all this money in cancer research trying to find a cure for cancer. Mm-hmm. And there's so many of these cancers. I think I was reading a statistic just this morning that 85% of cancers can actually be reversed, treated and reversed with diet alone. And that's huge.
And the main thing is just how can it hurt you? I mean, just regardless of what's going on in your life with your health, just eat more plants. That's the bottom line.
You know, with respect to your mom, I think it's a great story. And what I want to say is people who already have some sort of cardiovascular disease and they've got the blockage started, whether they know or not, this is where cold turkey is so important, making a transition to something that's really, really clean. Mm-hmm. Because when you already have a disease, just eliminating a few foods, even just even if you go vegetarian, it's not enough.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately know one person I'm thinking of in particular. He lost a lot of weight and his color was really good, and now he's going in for some heart surgery because he was eating eggs and a lot of oil.
Yeah.
And it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, what's more important than your health? What's more important than your health for you? But what's more important than your health for your children, for your family, for the ones who want you to be here and be a part of their lives? I mean, there are so many reasons to put the right thing in your mouth all the time. There's just really limited excuses to put the wrong thing in your mouth, and you've got to look at things in that fashion. I think we need to.
Yeah. What's frustrating for me, I like to keep a positive outlook, but there's a lot of frustration too, and that is we've come a long way in our science and our knowledge, and people today can benefit right away from that knowledge, and still people tend to take baby steps. Other countries, India and China, are now doing what we did decades ago and haven't learned from our current knowledge. And so their heart disease and diabetes are increasing. But it is, as you mentioned before, there is that money factor. And we haven't quite figured out the way to make a good profit margin from broccoli and apples.
Well, not yet, anyway. Although we probably should stop looking at it from that perspective and just look at where we are with our debt load. You know, people talk about all these different ways to reduce our debt and to reduce our health care costs and everything. So if you're not going to look at it from a profit margin standpoint as a consumer, then look at it as a way of reducing your debt, you know, and even your personal debt. How much money do you spend in health care yourself? How much money do you spend on medications? You want to reduce that? Changing the way you're changing what you eat is obviously going to do that. But it's so hard, I think, because of the addictive component. Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, back when we made the change, I would not have admitted this to you, but good heavens, I'm a recovering cheeseaholic. You know, and Paul, I used to be really concerned about the amount of sugar that he consumed. And I think if I ever mentioned the word being a sugar addict, you know, I said cheese, I think, but a sugar addict, he would have denied that, because nobody likes to admit that you're addicted to anything. You know, that's for something far more extreme like drugs and alcohol and whatever.
Well, there is plenty of science that shows that sugar is more addicting mm-hmm. than cocaine.
Cocaine, mm-hmm. exactly. And I think that's sad that we don't, that's not discussed openly for good reason.
It's white powder.
That's right. Yeah, and the people don't want us to, again, if they can keep us kind of dumbed down, they can control us. And I think that's, you know, the more we can do to get this information out to the masses, you know, it's just common sense, but again, it's very uncommon. And so the more we can do to get the message out, I don't think people really want to die of these chronic diseases. I just think they simply don't know better because the information is so suppressed.
This information is so important, and your film is important. I want to get to that in a moment. So those of us in the United States are kind of living through the election and this inauguration that's going to take place, maybe, in a few weeks. It's very frightening. But people who are discovering the lies that have been made about our food system, and people who are discovering how they can regain their health and feel better, have to connect the dots that I like to say it's all about food and it's connected to food, but there are lots of messages that we're getting that are not truthful, and it kind of opens the door to really think about everything.
Yeah.
So let's start with putting healthy, delicious food in people's mouths, and then they realize, no, we don't need to kill animals for food. No, we don't need to consume junk food. What else should we not be doing, and who else should we not be listening to?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And I think Dr. Greger and several of them, but have made the link with, you know, the way that we used to look at smoking, you know, back in the day. And my mom's an RN, and she remembers being a young nurse, the advertisements that were on TV about the health benefits of oils, you know, mm-hmm. where the doctor would have the bottle of corn oil sitting on the corner of his desk and would take a couple gulps. And, you know, now we think, oh, horrors, you know, that's terrible. But we thought the same thing about smoking. And we, you know, have gone through this whole change to where our food is really the same way, but we're not looking at it in that same way. And with respect to specifically the oils, I know, you know, so much of the propaganda out there is that olive oil and coconut oil are healthy for you. Okay, going back to your point about thinking, right? Starting to think. Okay, I had to go back and go, oh, all right, so I'm hearing this information. So what makes olive oil and coconut oil healthy, but like corn oil and safflower oil and soybean oil not healthy? Because that's kind of where we are. Well, when you stop to think about it logically, they're all the same.
Right.
So, you know, what is it that keeps us dumbed down? And oftentimes I think it's we're just so gullible when it comes to advertising. And we don't want to admit that we are, but that, in fact, is what we are, is gullible to the advertising.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this film. When did it open?
It opens
tomorrow.
Well, here in New York.
It opened in other places.
Opened in L.A.
Weeks.
Yes.
The second.
The second, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, all the dates are running together now.
So the second.
Yeah, December 2nd, it opened in L.A. at the Sundance Sunset Cinema there, ran through the 8th. And then we hopped on the bus and drove our way across country, and here we are. It opens tomorrow in New York City. But we've had about 50 plus at this point, pre-release screening events all across the country and into Canada and Australia as well. So it's been really fun to hear people's response and reaction to the film at this point.
Was there a party after the first Sundance
showing? You know,
we didn't have time for a party. We had to literally head to New York.
So
we didn't actually do. Some of the evenings when we were there, we had, you know, some parties and things.
I want to know what was served at those
special guests. Oh, yeah. No. You know, actually, most of the food came out of the our rolling mobile kitchen, you know, on the bus because I was doing a lot of the cooking. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've been eating.
Yeah, in California and in here in New York City, you can find restaurants to eat, but obviously in between, it's more difficult. So part of the reason we do travel via bus is because we need that kitchen so we can eat healthy food on the road. It's difficult. You know, that's sad to say, but it's just difficult to find healthy food.
Yeah, the places that need the message most.
Exactly.
Exactly.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's been fun.
And so what have people been saying?
Well, the response, I guess no one's going to walk up to us and say, hey, the film sucks. But they, you know, online we've had good feedback and we've had the reviews, everything have been great. All the screenings, people have stayed, 45 minutes and asked questions afterwards. Mm-hmm. So it's just been it's been great. I mean,
it feels a little weird to want to sit here and say specifically what they've been saying because it feels like you're patting yourself on the back. So
please do.
That's really not.
That's what we're all
about. Really uncomfortable with that one. But I think what the biggest testament is to the film is when they walk out of the film with tears in their eyes and they say, okay, how do I make this change? Mm. What are the next steps I need to take? Mm-hmm. And to us, that's why we made the film. You know, and that's what is fulfilling about the film. And that's what just continues to propel us forward and keep us passionate about getting the message out there. Because if we can see that kind of a response widespread, then we really can change the world together. You know, I kind of like to say we're hopefully amassing an army. You've had all these various people and components out there. You have the vegan movement that this platform supports. You have the whole food plant-based movement and all of the physicians and everything that have done the research proving that this is an optimal approach to health. You have the environmental component, people like James Cameron and so many of the celebrities that have jumped on board too in their passion for the environment. And hopefully this film kind of draws them all in together and gives us a very broad base platform and allows us to amass an army of people who support this message and kind of get it out there and get it to the masses because that's the kind of change we'd like to see.
Now, I would like to see it all merge with Van Jones's Love Army, right? Get that whole big, broad message out there.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see. And actually, we've had some people that saw it early on when I think the film first was seen publicly. At just across the water here in New Jersey, in Morristown, New Jersey, was its first opening, if you will, at the Veg Fest there, Morristown's very first Veg Fest there. Very well attended, very exciting for Morristown and all the people that hosted that. And some of those people from that time on have kind of kept us posted about their progress because they decided to make the change. And so we're actually tracking them right now and hearing about how much weight they've lost and how many medications they're off now and those kinds of exciting pieces of information and news that are very, very fulfilling and very rewarding.
Just briefly, on the other side, have you heard any negative feedback? You know, at the same time, I mean, I really think the whole food plant-based movement is building and growing, and it should. There's so much science behind it. But at the same time, there's that pushback from paleo peeps and the ones that want us to continue to eat animals.
We do hear that, but we have not heard very much of it in our pre-screenings. I would imagine as the film gains more mainstream popularity, we'll hear more and more of that, obviously. But it's not been bad so far, but we know that's going to exist. I mean, we're going to hear it from that. We're going to hear it from the pharmaceutical companies. I hope we do, because if we hear from them, that means we've done our job and we're kind of rattling the cages. Because I think to be responsible with the message, that's what it's going to have an impact on those industries.
So unlike some people who have risen to power recently, you think you can handle some criticism?
I think
some negative tweets.
Yeah, I think we knew when we kind of went into this, we had to kind of grow a thick skin pretty quickly. So we do expect to have a lot of criticism, a lot of people saying that this is just ridiculous. There's no truth to this. Yeah. You've got to have science. And we do have those questions from time to time. People step up and say, this is really great. But is there really science to support this? Mm. As though there is science to support the standard American diet, which there isn't. And ultimately, we try to answer the questions as best we can. But ultimately, science is really difficult. You determine what you're going to believe. I didn't go out with T. Colin Campbell. do the studies that he did. I just have to make a decision whether I'm going to believe it or not, whether it makes sense to me. And that's all we can ask, is that people read that information, look into it, and see what makes this the most sense to them. And I think that we're all going to come to the same conclusion if people were actually aware of all the information.
And I think it goes beyond, too. I mean, you can read one thing and believe it, but you can't argue with the results of actually doing it and trying it. And no one can argue with your personal experience. And I think that's the beauty of this. We don't necessarily go into it to be confrontational with anybody. Yeah. You know, if somebody wants to be confrontational with us, all we can say in response to them is, I'll tell you what, if you don't believe it, that's okay. But you have to put yourself to the challenge. Try it for 2 or 3 weeks, then come back and talk to me and tell me it doesn't work.
Yeah. That's right. I would have said this to someone who says to me, which that has happened before, and all I say to them is, I understand what you're saying. I was right there with you. I didn't believe it either. Mm. It didn't make it. I thought this was ridiculous. But then when you try it, just 30 days, and you see the response that you get, that your body tells you, shows you, it's like, That's where the proof is.
I like to say, and I say it a lot, you don't know how good you can feel. You just don't know until you try it. And the wonderful thing is the food is fantastic. For those who've been to ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com, my nonprofit, we're constantly putting out new recipes. Just this morning, for example, I have a friend who's coming over for dinner, and I just ran around and I made some incredible food really fast just because I know how to do that and I've practiced, but...
And you didn't bring any today?
No, but I have a daily blog called What Vegans Eat, and tomorrow you'll be able to see what I made today and what we'll be eating tonight. It's a couple of our new recipes that we're really excited about. One is called a tornado de riz, and it's based on a round steak recipe, but it's made from a mix of whole grains and spices, and it comes with a... sauce Dijonnaise, a cream Dijon sauce. It's really delicious.
Sounds awesome. I can't pronounce it, but I bet I could eat it.
You absolutely could. Yes, and you'd love it. So we're out of time. And it's been wonderful sitting here and listening to your stories and hearing about your wonderful film. Thank you for walking this earth and doing this work.
No, thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay, I've been speaking with Marilee Jacobs and Paul David Kennemer, Jr., and they are creators of the Eating You Alive documentary. Just one more thing. Where can people in New York see it this week?
Yep. They can see it at the IFC Center starting tomorrow, Wednesday the 14th, running through the 20th.
Okay, get your tickets now. And thanks for joining me. And It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to this program, It's All About Food, because it is all about food. Join me at ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com and send me messages at info@realmeals.org. And remember, have a delicious week. We'll be right back.